Missed something? Be sure to like us on Facebook for great moments from the shows and breaking sports news. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is...
Well, here we are.
Felger.
What?
And Mass.
The whole team suck.
Felger and Mass.
Maybe your part in the back is a little bit loose.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Red Sox on the edge of another win. And a 2-2. Looked like he went. That is strike three. And that is the ball game. The Red Sox have won it by a final score of 9-6.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. And that's how we're going to start. We're going to start with the Red Sox and some Hanley Ramirez stuff. We know that Adrian Wojnarowski is hard at work. We know NBA free agency is cooking. So we have fingers on buttons. We are ready to roll to give you the very latest when it comes across. But as it stands right now, we're going to start with some Red Sox stuff. They win last night again. Oh, Jim Murray in from Az.
Hi.
Matt McCarthy in our update studios.
Hey.
Hi, Matthew.
What's up?
No pleasantries. Thank you. Appreciate that.
First rule.
Red Sox win last night, 54 wins on the year. Murray, they're the exact midpoint of the season, right?
Yes. Yeah, 81 games. And another mostly... whatever type of win last night. It was
a little bit exciting,
but go ahead.
I'm not talking about last night. 54 wins.
Yeah.
Best record in baseball,
mm-hmm.
on record pace for a wins for in their franchise, right?
Yeah.
I think
don't maybe do the math, but yeah. Between that and J.D. Martinez.
54 wins so far, they're on pace for 108?
Sure. Let's not do math on the air. Whatever. They're a buzzsaw right now. Go ahead.
Best record in baseball.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
No.
Yeah, right. How come you're not? So that goes back to when I just asked you about last night. You're like, meh.
Because they're mostly boring. Because the league is boring. There's three good teams in the American League. The Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Houston Astros. Period. End of story. That's it. I don't care what the Mariners are doing. Because even if they had them in a one-game playoff, Chris Sale would own their ass, and they'd end up facing, you know, New York or Houston in that next round. The league stinks. And I couldn't have been more wrong about this Angels team. They were better when they had Ohtani, but they suck too. And the Red Sox own them. They've completely owned them so far in all the six games that they played them. So, all right, maybe I've just been around you two guys too much, and I've had the fun sucked out of me as a sports fan, but I don't think that that's it. It really, they do nothing for me. And I know I sound like the guy who's
normally here. The Red Sox do nothing for you.
Unless they're playing the Yankees, the Astros. Right now, no. They really do. They do precious little for me.
Okay, I'm not talking about like a night-to-night excitement level, but baseball's tough to get excited about on a night-to-night level. Your confidence in the team about how good they are. They're doing nothing for you.
Now let's see it in October. That's what I still need. Let's see what it looks like this weekend. Let's see David Price against Luis Severino on Sunday night. That I will be into. This weekend series, that's something to get up for. This, it does nothing for me. Even when they blew it again, that bullpen blew it again last night, which is, you know, a major red flag in this team. And something. It's one of the reasons I can't get up for them. And it's one of the reasons I do think that they're going to end up crapping their pants again come October. Unless that gets fixed. But how is Dombrowski going to fix it? Unless that changes, like, I can't. So I need to see it against the Yankees. I need to see it in the postseason. Until then, going to be a lot of games that I'm not going to be able to get up for.
So is that it, McCarthy? You see their fatal flaw last night, and you just don't buy in? You see, once again, seventh, eighth inning, they can't get through, and that's the issue.
It's the trust factor, and that's why people aren't excited about this team, because they've seen them fall flat on their faces in the last two postseasons. The Red Sox have hit a point where you have to prove it. And last night in particular, the bullpen comes up again, and you just know that this team will fail in the postseason when it comes right down to it if they don't fix this problem. Like, the Red Sox are going to win a boatload of games this year, but can they win it when it counts? And that's the big question. Like, this does nothing for me. With the American League being the crap that it is this year, if the Red Sox win 100 games this year, which, I mean, when was the last time they won 100 games? I don't know. But it doesn't do anything for me because it makes me feel no better about their chances in October. And you know what? There's no way that they can prove it to me between now and then. We're kind of in that stage with the Red Sox. They cannot prove anything to me until it counts in October.
And that's coming from a guy who lives, eats, and breathes baseball and has the Hardcore Baseball Podcast, which people should check out on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, but that include. So what if, Matthew, they start getting through the 7th, 8th inning clean?
Can they do that in October? Okay, so like Joe Kelly.
What if they do it now?
Then it doesn't matter now.
You won't trust it? I mean, not that they can do it now. They obviously still can't do it now. But if they could, you wouldn't say, okay.
Can Joe Kelly do anything between now and October that makes you trust him? Can Matt Barnes do anything between now and October that makes you trust him?
And the answer,
it's the circle of trust.
The answer's no.
Matt Barnes has an ERA against the Yankees, the Astros and the Mariners, the three other best teams in the American League. Matt Barnes' ERA against them is 6 this year. Joe Kelly against those three teams, 5.5.
Yeah, through 81 games, there's two things that you can't argue about this team. One, anyone that doubted J.D. Martinez, I'll raise my hand, is an idiot. And he is the difference maker in this lineup. I mean, his 25th home run last night, he's hitting, what, 329, whatever it is.
Why are you an idiot to doubt J.D. Martinez? It's half a year.
Yeah, but Mike, this isn't going to stop with this guy. This guy's the real deal.
Okay, you're sure?
It looks that way. Yeah, do you really?
Of course it looks that way. He's had great half years before.
No, if you include...
He had an amazing half year. Right. He had an amazing half year to end last year, and he had an amazing half year to begin this year.
Well, to be fair, if we're going to do that kind of sample size for Jackie Bradley Jr., we have to do it for J.D. Martinez. The guy right now looks like one of the great free agent signings in this team's history.
He's been great. I just don't know if he's...
So he's the difference maker in the lineup. And the other thing is you can't trust anyone outside of Craig Kimbrell in that bullpen. They all suck. It's the reason they have the wheel of gutless bums. From Hembry to Kelly to Matt Barnes to whoever the hell they're throwing out there, they're all the same. They all have stuff and nothing in between their ears. They all suck. So unless Dave Dombrowski adds a real setup man, I'm going to continue to doubt this team, and I'm going to need to see it in October, and I still think they're going to end up crapping their pants because the bullpen blows.
Do you trust Kimbrel? Because in the two biggest moments of Kimbrel's career, in the two biggest moments of his career, he's failed. Game 162 in Atlanta in 2011, he failed. Game 4 last year in the playoffs, he failed. Do you trust him in more than 3 out saves? Like, Kimbrel's way down on my list of concerns. But to say he's not a concern, you're kidding yourself.
You are. I see him in the eighth. Oh, yeah, no, it's going to get shaky.
Exactly. I'm not a huge fan because unless it's that clean, no traffic ninth inning, it's, I think he's, and to me, that tells me something. When he's not the same guy, if there's runners on base in the eighth, or if they use him in even hinting at a non-save situation or anything other than the clean ninth, 1-2-3 save, he's a different guy. I don't trust him. I hate those guys. And it feels like that's what he is. But you're right, McCarthy should be way down your list. It's the eighth inning. Or seventh, and it was the seventh inning last night. And this is one of the games where I don't have any second guessing for Cora. I think he handled it right because he went Kelly, then Barnes. Usually it'd be the other way around, right? Kelly's your top setup guy, so he'd get the eighth, Barnes would get the seventh. But in the seventh, you had Trout, you had Pujols, you had the top of the order. So Kelly came out first and Barnes came out second, which was the right. So I thought Cora handled it well and Kelly should have gotten through it, but he throws it in the crapper. So it's not even like he gagged in a pitching situation. He just gagged. Because that's what those guys do, both those guys. It really doesn't matter. Spin the wheel of gutless bums. Kelly, Barnes, Kelly. You can play with it. I think Cora did the right thing.
It doesn't matter.
But it doesn't matter. It's like as soon as the leverage turns up on those guys, it is, man, it is Shart City, those two. And so, to me, here's the story. It's not that it happened last night. It's that there's really nothing they can do about it. That, to me, is the story. They have nothing in the system to trade, and they have the tax issue. Like, and again, I hope that's not that doesn't hold. But to this point, it looks like they're dead set on staying under the tax. So if you have nothing to deal in your system, and you can't really add payroll, how are you going to get better out of the bullpen? What's Tyler Thornburg doing on that rehab? He gave up another home run last night, right?
Yeah, gave up 2 runs last night in Portland. Not great.
Okay, so Thornburg ain't ready. So that to me is the story. They're stuck. How do they get better there?
I don't know.
How do they get better, McCarthy?
So
hardcore baseball?
They can compete in the middle of the market.
You're like a baseball guy.
Yes, they can compete in the middle of the market. I mean, they did it last year. They went out and got Addison Reed for essentially nothing.
So when you say nothing, how much does he make?
Well, as far as prospect capital, they
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, go.
So yeah, you're talking about dealing in July. Like, they can go out and get somebody. Kelvin Herrera didn't go for much to the Royals. So, like, they can compete in the middle of the reliever market. The question is, can Dave Dombrowski identify the guy? The bullpen has always been Dave Dombrowski's bugaboo. Like, if he had a bullpen in Detroit, they beat the Red Sox in 2013, they win the World Series. Dave Dombrowski has struggled in the past to identify the right bullpen arms. In his defense, the last 2 years he went out and got Ziegler and Reed, who did pretty well. But you have even less to deal with now. It ultimately falls on Dombrowski to go out and identify a guy that you can get on the cheap.
Do you trust him, McCarthy?
To get a bullpen arm? Nah, not really. Not really.
Yeah, and this Brandon Phillips move they make yesterday.
Jimmy Stewart's cheering back there. Why are you cheering?
Because I think it's so funny how negative we are when this team has 54 wins on pace for 108-ish.
That's how I started there. On pace for 108 wins, franchise record, best record in baseball.
But you know what, Mike? If you have Joe Kelly as your best eighth inning option, you suck.
And I thought, with Maz out, we'd have a chance for a little more light to shine in here. Just a little more light. You guys are brutal.
I mean, again, what
we could have brought Jones in here for this.
Oh, my God. Dude, this is so negative. Jones is listening right now going, these guys are pretty negative.
What can you really take out of some of these games? The Alex Cora asked the starters to go deeper into the games. You tax them, and come playoff time, they'll be burnt out, too. Like, I think you're burying your head in the sand if you don't look at this team and see that red flag and say, and think to yourself, this is going to end up costing them in the long run.
As of right now, it's a fatal flaw. It is. The bullpen is a fatal flaw. You can fix those things. Like, they could go out and they could get somebody. But as of right now, we stand here on, what, June 28th? It's hard to look at it and say it's not a fatal flaw.
All right, folks. Maz is out. We're talking Red Sox, and somehow it's gotten more negative, which is just, go figure that.
Bravo.
Your calls, your thoughts, and Hanley Ramirez. Interesting story overnight in The Athletic about Hanley Ramirez and where he stands and the fallout from that story. So we'll get to that as well. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Matt Barnes, Heath Henry, Joe Kelly, and those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Kelly, Thornburg, Hembry, Barnes.
And today's gutless bum is...
Ground ball snatched up. He's got it to fire into the outfield as the run scores. Runners will hold up at first and in second as the throw comes back. On a misfire by Kelly. That makes it a one-run game. It
wasn't his night, but then Barnes, he'd pick him up, and then Craig pick us up, and at the end, we ended up winning.
It's the wheel of gutless bums. These guys are tough.
Yeah, Joe Kelly was the gutless bum du jour last night. Just spin it there, Alex. Oh, let's go with Joe Kelly. And that play there is explaining it to you because he had missed it. Because at that point, you know, the Red Sox were already up. Why the hell even watch the rest of it? Because it would feel like it would be a formality at 6-0. But Mike Trout was the first out. Little bobbler back to, or it's right back to the mound to Kelly. He bobbles it, and he throws it right into center field. It should have been a double play ball.
So
yeah, the yips.
It falls under right, gutless bum. Because the pitching, it wasn't a pitching gag. It was just a general gag, which is what those two guys do, Kelly and Barnes. And I thought Cora played him right last night. He had Kelly first and then Barnes. And even that, you know, again, it's just, it is literally, it's the best example of it. Spin the wheel. So are these guys being too hard on the 54-win Red Sox? Best record in baseball, on pace for a franchise record, 108 wins. They make too hard on him? Howard and Amesbury, lead us off. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, Mike? Good to hear you guys. You know, I had a thought last night. I'm watching the game, and I said, boy, that bullpen stinks. And they need a lot of work because you never know what you're going to get. And I thought the Kelly play was terrible. And then one thing that was funny yesterday when Price was talking about how he's allergic to everything, and then he says fresh green-cut grass. And I said, geez, that's what the guy plays on half the year, you know, even when he was in Tampa. And the other thing, Mike, the last thing I want to say that's refreshing is the World Cup soccer. And I think you're a soccer fan. But I just wanted to say that the replay.
You know, hey, I'm going to let you go. We're not going to do any soccer. No soccer. So what else did he say? Can I respond to anything else that he said there?
How the bullpen. It sucks. He didn't trust it.
Okay, agreed. Cam and Taunton. Go ahead, Cam.
There could be an answer to your bullpen issues coming back when this guy returned, and that could be Pomerantz. Now, I talked about this with McCarthy in the past. But Pomerantz is heading into free agency, so he might put up a stink about being in the bullpen. But I think we all agree right now that if they win the division, the playoff rotation is Sale, Price, Rodriguez, Porcello, in whatever order you put those guys in. So when Pomerantz comes back, are you putting him in the eighth inning role, seeing if that lasts? They tried in the playoffs 2 years ago. They tried to make him Andrew Miller. It didn't work, but he's pitched out of the bullpen in the past. It's worth a shot.
I would definitely do it. Definitely give it a shot. Do I make him automatically the eighth inning guy? No. But I start giving him innings back there. Absolutely.
Yeah, but again...
Why, yeah, so why you don't even like that?
No, just the mental makeup of that player. Gun to your head. It's a one-run game. Two men on, two outs.
Here comes Pomerantz in to blow him away. You're right. Yeah, I feel that way. You're right.
Drew Pomerantz still. And didn't he serve up a bomb, too, in that series in Cleveland a couple of years ago, too?
He did.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. My memory of
Farrell called him found gold.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Yeah, found gold. Little old Drew Pomerantz. No thanks. With that elbow issue continuing, too, yeah, that's the answer. I'm telling you, look, I get it. It's fun. They're mashing. And that's the thing with last night, too. even when the Angels pull, they get close, they tie it up, whatever, it's 6-5, it's like, okay, it doesn't matter. The Red Sox are still going to hit their way out of this and win the damn thing, because that's what they do against bad teams. Three good teams in the American League. You're not going to get me off that. It's the Red Sox, the Yankees, Houston Astros. That's it. Everyone else sucks.
Stacey and Lawrence, you have a Red Sox thought for us?
Yeah, I just want to let you know I'm doing this pizza style. I think J.D. Martinez should be MVP. He's got an amazing swing, but I think he should be butt more because I have third base seats and I like his butt. And I wish Naz would be there because I would like to dip his bald head in baby oil and rub it all over my body.
Okay, Stacey, excellent. She held the phone like a pizza slice there, McCarthy. That's how you're talking to a cell phone.
Have to.
J.D. Martinez MVP? Sure, why not?
I mean, as of right now.
Could you give two poops about the MVP?
No.
Could you give two poops whether J.D. Martinez is the MVP or not?
No, I just hope that he keeps this up. I don't care if he wins the award or not. Just, keep up the way that, or at least come close. I mean, right now he's on pace for how many, like over 100 home runs or something ridiculous?
Just don't know why you're going to close the book on J.D. Martinez and what he is.
No, I'm saying for right now, Mike, through 81 games.
Yes. We can all read where they are through 81 games. What do you think he is?
Even if he was even if he produces half of what he's done for the remaining 81 other games, the signing is a win. Like, they got that one right. I thought he was going to be a complete bust here.
Me too. So to this point, I'm wrong. They're right. We're not even at the All-Star break of year one. I just think that's a little. I don't know. I just think that's. There's plenty of time for J.D. Martinez to have a bad second half and for things to go bad. And the more I hear the guy, I want to see how he handles it when he goes bad, because he feels like he's sort of bitchy and got a little bit of the David Price in him, and things are going great.
I'm with Maz, and his bitchiness is a good bitchiness. I think he's using that to motivate himself, and I think it's more. I don't think it has anything to do with the local media as much as it has to do with being slighted by,
he's mad at the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it has motivated him. I mean, again, we're looking at, if we're going to bash Jackie Bradley Jr. and go back to the All-Star break of last year and look at his numbers there, you have to do the same thing with J.D. Martinez. It's been a full season.
He's put together an amazing calendar year. Amazing. MVP caliber calendar year. Can't deny it. Okay, I just don't know why you put him in the lock category. 3-4 years ago, he was outright released. He was cut. He was available to anyone for free. So, that's just why I still have that hesitation with that player.
Well, his new training methods.
So, whatever it is. All right. How about something on Hanley Ramirez? You read this Athletic story overnight?
I did.
Okay. So, I find this interesting. A lot of this stuff interesting. First, McCarthy, let me just ask you, because you're new to the show. Do you think Hanley Ramirez was treated unfairly in the media or smeared by those reports?
Potentially, yeah. I think so, because we don't know the facts of the case yet. To be totally honest, he might have a bad friend, but I don't know anything more than that. So for us to jump to conclusions Friday night the way that we did, I'm not so crazy about it, to be totally honest.
You mean the way he's been treated?
The way Hanley's been treated? Yeah, essentially.
I think that's what you're saying. I'm trying to clarify what you're saying.
Correct.
You don't love the way Hanley's been treated. You think he's been treated unfairly?
Short and to the point. That's how we answer
the question. If you give me too much, I can't follow.
No 90-second answers that we don't care about.
Five-second answer, yes, I think Hanley Ramirez was treated poorly.
Thank you. Okay?
Thank you.
Because I'm stupid. So we'll start a GoFundMe page for the guy or something. This is how it feels, the outpouring of sympathy for Hanley. I disagree with you, McCarthy, just off the top. And this building thing about Ramirez is starting to get to me. We all have bad friends. McCarthy, are you good friends with heroin dealers?
I am not. Not to the best of my knowledge.
I know shady people, and I don't have any heroin people in my circle.
I was hesitant to ask Murray because it might have been a yes, but...
No, God, no.
Are any of your good friends heroin dealers?
No.
No.
Jimmy, do you have any good friends who are heroin dealers?
Not heroin.
Fentanyl and crack cocaine. Are any of you good friends with dealers of fentanyl and crack cocaine?
No.
Okay. No. So this is I hear this all the time. Well, we all have buddies who've done something stupid. He can't be responsible for his friend. True. So again, what Hanley did, I was probably not criminal, and I'm not saying it should be. You're not saying that it's fair to ask and question and raise a red flag when his good friend is a fentanyl and crack dealer?
I think it's fair to question him. I would just say that there was a lot of discussion over the weekend. It's like Hanley's fronting this whole thing. It was his car. There was a lot of unnecessary speculation.
Unnecessary.
I'll put it that way.
Okay.
I mean, he's brought criticism upon himself, and he's brought scrutiny upon himself, absolutely. To the degree that which it happened over the weekend, I thought that was a little bit unfair.
Okay, are people still saying that he was the front man or that that was his car?
They shouldn't be at this point.
I don't think they are. Like, that's not... But people are just saying he's been treated unfairly and somehow smeared in this. And, well, I mean, if that's the case, why don't the Red Sox just bring him back? Because they could use the right-handed bat, right? But, McCarthy, you're right. There's still a lot of details out there. On the other side as well. Like, can I give you one? Just a small detail. And this Athletic story, which I'll get to in a second. This Athletic story finally gave me some details. Like, the date that his friend was pulled over. April 16th. Patriots Monday. Meaning, the Patriots
Marathon
Day.
Monday.
Yeah, Marathon Monday, right? So, like, okay, good. Now I got a date. April 16th. You know what else I would like to know? This is just a small detail. It doesn't tell us a whole story, but it'd just be nice to know. What time? Because Hanley picked up the call, right? So not only is he picking up the call and FaceTiming, which we, at least Murray and I, and most of us acknowledge, connotes a level of intimacy and closeness, that you're FaceTiming with the guy. I mean, most of us don't FaceTime with anyone, and if it is anyone, it's their wife or their kid. That's about it.
You don't pick up my FaceTime calls.
I wouldn't pick up anything from you and McCarthy. So he picks up the FaceTime call during the drug bust on the side of the road. What time was the bust? What if it was 2:30 in the morning? Doesn't that tell you something about the story? Like, doesn't that just add a layer to it where you're like, huh, that's interesting. His best buddy, who's a fentanyl and crack dealer, FaceTimes him at 2:30 and he picks up. Like, wouldn't that just be...
What's the assumption you're making there? I'm a little...
Just, it adds a layer to it. I don't know. Use your head. Just think about it. I don't know. Does it change the story any iota in your mind?
No.
Maybe he's just a night owl.
Yeah.
So some people are awake at 2:30.
Yeah, so the heroin dealer, fentanyl dealer, is calling him at 2:30 on the side of the road with a trunk full of drugs, and he picks up at 2:30. You don't find that interesting? You don't think it changes it, whether it's 2:30 in the afternoon or 2:30 at night?
No. All it right. does. Well, I'm confused. What's the assumption that you're making there? Like, if he's up at 3 in the morning, he was awaiting that call?
Well, there's a general assumption that nothing good happens after midnight. I mean, that's just sort of like...
I thought it was 2 a.m.
I mean, I don't know. Like, for you, it's 4 a.m. or different people have a different time. But there's just that general sort of nothing good happens after a certain hour.
Okay.
You don't think a middle-of-the-night FaceTime call from the drug dealer makes it more suspicious?
I mean, if he picked it up on that first call and he's up.
And I'm not saying it is. I mean, maybe it was 3 in the afternoon. I don't know.
The thing you could assume.
I would just like to know the time. The middle, a middle of the night FaceTime call from the fentanyl dealer that is picked up. That doesn't change it at all for you? That doesn't just add another layer to it?
No, because there's details that are missing there. Did he pick it up and he heard it and he was like half asleep when he picked it up? Like,
You're right. I'd like to hear all of this. It's sealed.
I know.
It's sealed. So I'd like to hear all of this. What time was it? That's just a simple one. That adds a little color to it, and you can say it just, okay, what time? What time was the FaceTime call made? Was he picked up immediately without any forewarning, or did the guy text him and say, hey, Hanley, I got a situation here. The cop wants to talk to you. Would you mind FaceTime? You know, like,
or cops pick up.
Or is something like, and I don't know if that makes it better or worse, but I just think if you had more of those details... You could sort of say, well, is Hanley really innocent in this, or is he really, or not? But just, I don't know why he deserves a break when his good friend is a fentanyl dealer. That is beyond, my buddy did something stupid. Any good friends of yours out there who are known convicted fentanyl crack drug dealers? That's not just your buddy doing, why I'm not responsible for him. You know, are you picking up from your convicted known fentanyl crack dealer friend?
I mean, another little thing I didn't know until we looked at this story from The Athletic is that it's a childhood friend. So that even lends further to the thought that they're, you know, he knows this guy a hell of a lot better than this isn't an acquaintance. This is someone he's known since childhood. Like, he knows what's going on in this guy's life. I think that's a bad look for Hanley.
And so it's a bad look that he's a childhood friend.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I don't know. I've got to kick that around in my head. Maybe that means that he's loyal and he doesn't. But then again, why would you be loyal to a known drug dealer who's still running drugs? So, but like, just the more of those little details, I need more of those details before I feel that Hanley's been railroaded or unfairly smeared or any of this. I think if you count crack and fentanyl dealers among your close friends, I'm sorry, that says something about you, period. And then you're picking up? You're picking up the FaceTime calls from him, and you still have that level of communication and intimacy with the guy? What does that say about you? So I think Hanley's deserved just about everything that he's gotten. If there have been people out there who have been saying that he's criminal, then that's probably gone too far, because there's nothing to indicate that what he has done is criminal.
Well, I didn't like that the Globe wrote that story on Sunday. I was like, well, we're all done here. Nothing else to see. Story's over.
No, he's just good friends with a guy bringing in 2 kilos of fentanyl. The most deadly things that is on the street right now. It's one of the biggest problems in law enforcement and the opioid crisis and all of that. His good friends dealing kilos of it. But there's nothing to see here. Yeah. You've been unfair to Hanley. Like, have you people lost your minds? But let me get to that. The Athletic ties together some interesting timing with Hanley and all this stuff. We'll do that right after Matt McCarthy's update here.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Never had a doubt, honestly. You know, I know the guy, and I know, you know, his principles. I know how he cares about his family, and I don't think he was going to put himself in a position like that, and I'm glad that it's not true.
It's Alex Cora on the so-called exoneration of Hanley Ramirez. Here's the Athletic story. What has seemed on the surface anyway to be another cautionary tale about the life of a runaway rumor or the peril of instant infamy in the age of social media remains more complicated than that for former Red Sox first baseman Hanley Ramirez. And that remains true even after Sunday brought another development in the saga.
Nope, nothing to see here. It's all over. Story's over. Hanley's fine. Nope, he's been exonerated. Nothing to see here.
That's what the Globe implied. That's what Alex Cora just said. That's what I hear. I've heard a lot of this week. And then they go into just to the broad details of the story and the Globe story, how Ramirez's agent, Adam Katz, came out and said that the initial tweet by Michelle McPhee was irresponsible and reckless, and some of the reporting was irresponsible and reckless. And then Ramirez himself came out and tweeted, hashtag only love here. But, writes The Athletic, that's not the end of the story, not even close. When you peel back the layers, when you look at the confluence of facts and suspicions and coincidences that have surfaced and how it all might have affected where Ramirez finds himself today, which is 34 with a slugger's power and pedigree, yet still unsigned, it may be a long time before we really know everything that happened or how wronged and scarred Ramirez has had a right to feel. Again, that's the part I like. It's going to be a long time before we really know everything that happened or how wronged and scarred Ramirez has a right to feel. It says, all started when a childhood friend of Ramirez's permitted law enforcement officials to search his car when he was stopped in Lawrence, Mass. In April, but then balked when the cops asked to open a box they found in the back of the vehicle. The Globe reported that Ramirez's friend said the box was a gift from Ramirez's mother, wanted hand-delivered to Hanley. He even offered to call Ramirez via FaceTime to prove it, and Ramirez did pick up. It just so happened that the Red Sox traditional Patriots Day matinee had been rained out that day. So finally, the day of the traffic stop, April 16th. Finally, I got that, April 16th. The cops asked Ramirez on the call if he knew about the box. He said no. When they asked if he'd object if they opened it, Ramirez said no again. And that's when the illegal drugs were found. Both the childhood friend, who has since recanted Ramirez's involvement, and the informant who tipped law enforcement that Ramirez's friend was carrying what turned out to be 400 grams of fentanyl, both of those individuals are in law enforcement's control because their identities are being withheld and affidavits related to the case are sealed because of fears for each man's safety. He said, but their identities are being withheld and the affidavits to the case are sealed now for fears of each man's safety, which makes you wonder how calm Ramirez must feel. Right? Let me just stop there. So they fear for the safety of the guy that was pulled over and the informant. And the writers say, which makes you wonder how Ramirez must feel, who's bugged out to the DR, right? Isn't he in the DR?
Yes, that is correct. So again, according to his Instagram.
Just these little details. The fact that he's out of the country versus not at his home in Miami. And I know he's probably a dual citizen and, you know, got a home in the DR. But it's just another little detail. He's in the DR. The story of the April 16th arrest and call from authorities remained Ramirez's closely held secret until at least May 16th, when law enforcement agents actually indicted his friend. The alleged suspect wasn't arraigned until a May 31 hearing, in which authorities successfully asked the judge to seal details in the case. If you connect the dots to Ramirez's on-field performance over that time, here's what you get. Before the drug bust on April 16th, Ramirez had a .333 average and a .955 OPS. The full slash line was .333, .386, .569. It's mashing. And that was through Boston's first 17 games. He was also being complimented for a strong start and his efforts to fill a veteran leadership role since David Ortiz left. Starting May 16th, the same day law enforcement indicted his acquaintance, Ramirez went into a 2-for-37 nosedive over the next 10 days, ending with a 0-for-21 spiral before the Red Sox announced his release on May 26th. Overall, Ramirez lost nearly 80 points off his batting average in the 6 weeks after the bust, and his final slash line read .254, .313, .395 the day he was released. Maybe it's all a coincidence, maybe not.
A lot of pressure on him.
So what are your thoughts there?
He is involved somehow, even if it was just, okay, a childhood friend. He has to know, I have to think, a childhood friend. He knows what this guy has been up to, how he was making his money. And, look, I read this, and it leads me to believe, you know, feeling the pressure for what's going on with his friend, his involvement in this case somehow. He obviously, you know, the phone call was made to him, so he knows that the cops are involved. The friend's been indicted. He's been arrested. Maybe he's going to get looked at. He's starting to feel the pressure here. He starts to feel the pressure at the plate, and he goes into this slump. I do think that it's connected.
McCarthy?
My take is the Red Sox, this is more proof that the Red Sox knew. Because if the bust happened on April 16th, and then all of a sudden the arraignment happens on May 16th, there's a month there where law enforcement people are talking behind the scenes. So when the Red Sox tell you that they didn't know, oh, they knew. They had, what, 6 weeks between the initial bust?
Are there really people out there who still think the Red Sox wouldn't have known?
The Red Sox keep denying it.
Yeah, well, of course the Red Sox deny it. I know, but I mean, who believes that?
Probably Pete Abe.
I'm sure there are some people.
I mean, did everyone in the team know? I'm not saying that, but the
organization, the brass, they knew.
The gossip gets around. I mean, it gets around. I mean, if you want to say they didn't know immediately after the I mean, my guess is the cops started gossiping on April 17th, and the Red Sox knew by April, the night of April 17th. Like, that would be my guess. That's usually the way it works. But certainly by the time you get to the arraignment or the indictment on May 16th, May 3rd, I mean...
From the indictment to his slump, I do think that there's a connection. Because, look, how many times in baseball, in all the years you've watched it, have you seen a guy and like, wow, what the hell's going on with this guy? And it comes out later, oh, he was going through a divorce or something was going on in his life. It's a mental game.
Starting May 16th, the same day law enforcement indicted his acquaintance, Ramirez went into a 2-for-37 nosedive over the next 10 days, ending with a 0-for-21 spiral before the Red Sox announced his release on May 26. Overall, he lost 80 points off his batting average in the 6 weeks after the bust. And the Red Sox aren't looking there going, first of all, they've heard the chatter, because everyone hears the chatter, and then they look at the performance, and so, like, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a coincidence, maybe not, as the story says. But in no way do I look at this and go, oh, yeah, poor Hanley's been railroaded. You know, what is that... There's an expression, you're only as good as the company you keep, or right. You're like, there's some sort of expression like that, right? His friend is a convicted drug dealer. That is different than a friend just doing something stupid and you're not responsible for that friend. And his performance fell off a cliff. So there's just he's still in the DR. They've sealed the records, presumably, because they want to protect those other guys because they're in danger for some reason. And does that mean Hanley's in danger? And the story sort of alludes to the fact, well, you must wonder how Ramirez must feel.
Well, look, if this is part of...
Or is it sealed because, I'm sorry, Murray, is it sealed because my suspicion would be that someone didn't want all the details to get out because it looks bad on the Red Sox.
Yeah, it might be that. Or look, if this is part of a bigger ring, anyone that speaks or the potential of them speaking, these guys could end up getting killed. You know, so that's why they have to protect the guy that was arrested and the informant. That's obvious.
Oh,
but...
no, but poor Hanley. He's been smeared.
No, nothing to do with it. Nothing to see here.
He's been smeared, and shame on the media.
Yeah.
Oh, hopefully this is a lesson to the media. Hopefully this is a lesson that, you know, these runaway, rampant, false, and reckless rumors. Oh, should we start a GoFundMe for Hanley? I think we should start something for him. The poor guy. Oh, the poor guy. But just go back to the, like, again, you're not responsible for your friend. Your idiot friend calls you. You pick up. What are you supposed to do? Well, fine, I guess, kind of. What if your idiot friend is a convicted drug dealer and is bringing up kilos of fentanyl and crack? And that's your good friend? That's the company you keep. Please. Would you please? So we'll just follow up on this coming up in our long commercial-free segment next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Janta.
Magenta?
Janta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
To your phones, as promised, thoughts on that Hanley stuff. Andrew on the road. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, we've been talking a couple of days, you know, when the Red Sox knew what they knew. And we obviously thought, you know, they had their own security staff and whatnot. But you guys just said, you know, that his friend was actually indicted on the 24th, and on the 25th they let him go.
No, he was indicted on the 16th.
I thought you said he was pulled over on the 16th, but he was officially indicted on the 24th.
April 16th, pulled over. May 16th, indicted. May 31st, May 16th, he was pulled over on April 16th, indicted May 16th.
Oh, okay. I thought you said the 24th. I'm sorry. They obviously, you know, they had to have known ahead of time either way, and they were probably just waiting for it to drop once he was indicted. And if they have their own security, they knew, hey, this is an associate of Hanley's, like, we're going to have to do something about this. And then they obviously used Cora as the, let's say, buffer between it. You know, if it came from, you know, up high and they said, we want to get rid of him, we got to get rid of him.
I think it's possible that Hanley didn't. I mean, that Cora didn't know. I'm not saying the on-field people knew. You cannot tell me that the Red Sox security people, who are former cops, most of them, and have connections with law enforcement, that's why you have team security, didn't hear the gossip. Now, where that went from there, I couldn't tell you. But it's impossible for me to believe that the Red Sox security people didn't pick up on the chatter, and it wasn't known in some places of the building. And I don't know, like...
Again, use me as the example. I heard this almost to a T, including now having read this Athletic story, because I don't even remember. Like, I had heard that the traffic stop was on Patriots Day, so I was like, okay. And then this has since been confirmed. All of this, Mike, to a T, I heard within days of Hanley being DFA'd. Me, a schlub like me. If I heard this, you mean to tell me the Red Sox didn't hear this? Please.
Look, I mean, I'm not sure why this has become such an important point, because I hope the Red Sox did know, and I hope the Red Sox acted on it. I mean, and there's no shame in that. And
because of his slump and, look, the money, they have the easy out by saying the baseball reasons.
So maybe it's just people just don't like being lied to, or there's a natural thing to go back and forth if you know you're being told an obvious lie. But other than that, I want the Red Sox to know. I want them to act on that information. If it's one of the reasons they let Hanley go, good for them. They should have. And now if they're sort of covering it up because they're worried about players' grievances and things like that, I'm fine with that, too.
Same here. And I can understand it. It's the arrogance, the air of arrogance from the team and, look, the piece in the globe that I kind of find, you know, a little bit like, all right, you know, calm down a little bit here. Like, we all know you knew. I know you have to say this to protect your asses in terms of the grievance of the Players Association, a potential lawsuit or anything like that, but calm down here with the finger wagging.
AJ in Illinois, go ahead.
Hey, my main man. How you doing, Mike? It's a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
How you doing, AJ? What do you got?
I don't care about these rich athletes anymore, and then they doing this type of kind of stupid stuff. And not only that, but remember the Bears receiver
Sam Hurd.
And I'm looking at that, you're rich. Why would you want to deal with drugs?
That's insane. It's insane. And again, I'm not telling you that Hanley should be thrown in jail unless he's done something criminal. It doesn't look like he's done anything criminal. But the Red Sox, Major League Baseball, any employer has every right in the world to look at the guy and say, who are you running with? Who are your friends? Who are you close to?
Drop this guy.
Who do you associate with? And those are the people you associate with? See you later, dude. See you later. That is well within their rights. And so, again, throw Hanley in jail. Is he responsible criminally? I don't know. Probably not. But the judgment that was made on him by, maybe the Red Sox, maybe the rest of Major League Baseball, fully deserved. Fully deserved. Mike in the car. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, I was had a little theory about maybe Hanley Ramirez saw the heat that was coming to him from all this stuff, and he went to Alex Cora and was like, hey, let's release me so that I can get out of Dodge. And I don't know how bad these fentanyl people are. They're probably bad because they like kill people in the streets all the time.
Yeah, no, they're bad, bad. So, Mike, I think that's a fine theory, except then Alex Cora has really been lying through his teeth. Well, he's been lying well. And I don't want to put that on him and say that it's like he's just
covering his ass there.
I mean, beyond just covering his ass, if Hanley said, you know, guys, I'm in trouble, I got to get the hell out of here, would you release me? And they release him. And then Alex, you know, then they concoct this whole story where Dombrowski says it was Alex, and Alex says, I want to get Moreland playing time, and Alex carries
on.
And
if he was involved and he was trying to get to the Dominican Republic to get out of here, then, you know, if he got looked into by authorities, they could have potentially be obstructing justice.
Exactly.
They can't do that.
Right, they're an accomplice. Right, they're harboring a criminal or whatever. Right, there's no way. Right, I don't want to believe that.
And I love a conspiracy theory, but no.
I mean, there was something close with the Patriots that... You know, the team got sensitive to, and they should have, was this, remember when Aaron Hernandez...
Flophouse.
Had, well, not just a flophouse, McCarthy, but didn't he go meet Bill one-on-one at the Combine in Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Reportedly, yeah.
And the word there was that Bill told him to get the hell out of town, and that's when he, like, rented an apartment in Santa Monica for the summer or something, and he spent some months in Santa Monica, and of course ran into the trouble there with the law, where there's some incidents where the cops had to come to his apartment, but, like, that's sort of borderline. If you know that you're... If an associate's involved in criminal activity, and instead of reporting it, you tell them to get out of town, like that's sort of sketchy territory there. Tony and Stoneham, go ahead. What do you got, Tony?
Hey guys, how you doing? First of all, I don't know how you cannot understand the Red Sox. They cannot say a word because they would be expose themselves to trouble.
It's fine.
They can't even discuss it.
It's fine.
I don't understand, but why are you making an issue? But here's what I want to understand. How do you know this guy is his best friend?
I'm sorry?
How do you know this guy is his best friend?
He's just a friend. He's just a friend of his.
Oh, but you had said earlier that a best friend. But and I take exception with the fact that you think it's odd for someone to answer their phone at 2:30 in the morning. If I got a call at 2:30 in the morning, I'm not checking who it is. I'm going to answer it because I think maybe someone... And the family is in trouble or something.
Tony, do you FaceTime?
Do I what?
FaceTime. You even know what that is?
Yes, I know what FaceTime is, yeah.
Do you do it?
No.
Okay. Why?
I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't have a phone that will do it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know about FaceTime. I'm not making an issue about FaceTime, but I think so much of this is being blown out of proportion. I mean, look at all the other Red Sox players that have been in slumps, and they don't have any problems. Slumps is part of baseball.
Sure. Correct. My point, though, with the association is this.
I find the timing interesting.
It's a drug-dealing friend who FaceTimes you and you pick up. I mean, the fact that you're picking up the FaceTime tells me that you're not a casual... And this is why I want some details, McCarthy. You know, maybe if we could unseal the thing and say that first he texted him, then he woke him up, or then he texted him repeatedly. He texted his brother to say, get Hanley to call me back because I got something. And Hanley says, fine, 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 I'll do it. Like, if there's like a whole chain there that they got Hanley on, that's, you look at that differently, then he gets pulled over, he FaceTimes, and there's Hanley. Like, I think there's all sorts of little nuances here.
Yeah, at the very least, I just think it's premature for the Boston Globe and others to say, oh, no, he's got nothing to do with this thing here. Because even at the end of this athletic story, a source familiar with the drug case says, Ramirez's unnamed pal could be back in court mid-July for his arraignment, meaning the affidavit and more details about the case could be unsealed then. And what are the details of that call? You know, like, what did Hanley look like? Was he just waking up? Did he act like he really didn't know the guy? Like, there's more here.
What time was it? Just give me a simple time of day. Was it 3 in the morning that he picks up the FaceTime from the drug dealer with the trunk of fentanyl? You're saying there's nothing to see there? I don't know. Like, doesn't that just give you a little color to the situation? I want to hear all those little details. I think they're all sort of significant. So anyway, there's your Hanley follow-up. We can continue with that conversation if you like. We'll get an update here from McCarthy. Then we'll talk some hockey. We didn't do any yesterday. We're going to update you on the Tavares stuff. We're going to give you the very latest. Ty Anderson's going to come in here and tell us what he knows, and we'll talk to you about it as well. So don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.